Welcome back to CNA 938 World Report. I'm Jagruti Dave in Washington. U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has met Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen in California, becoming the most senior U.S. official to meet a Taiwanese leader on U.S. soil since 1979. The meeting, which also included a bipartisan group of lawmakers, went ahead despite threats of retaliation from China, which claims self-ruled Taiwan as its own. Mr. McCarthy said he hoped the meeting could promote democracy, peace and stability. Earlier, I spoke to Nina Maria Potts and started by asking her what was said.
Well, both leaders spoke of the strong bond between the US and Taiwan, despite the US's One China policy, under which Washington recognizes and has formal ties with Beijing rather than the island of Taiwan, which China sees as a breakaway province. U.S. Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy said the U.S. would honor its obligations to Taiwan and its commitment to their shared values.
I believe our bond is stronger now than at any time or point in my lifetime. And of course, President Tsai is a great champion of that bond. The friendship between the people of Taiwan and America is a matter of profound importance to the free world. And it is critical to maintain economic freedom, peace, and regional stability.
President Tsai Ing-wen of Taiwan expressing her gratitude for America's friendship, thanking the bipartisan group of lawmakers for their commitment.
Their presence and unwavering support reassure the people of Taiwan that we are not isolated and we are not alone. It is no secret that today, the peace that we have maintained and the democracy which have worked hard to build are facing unprecedented challenges.
The major challenge is China's recent positioning on the issue. China has condemned the meeting and threatened retaliation. Last year, it launched huge military drills around the island of Taiwan after then U.S. Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taipei. In defiance of that stance, the Taiwanese president and U.S. House Speaker stood alongside each other for the first time on U.S. soil, expressing solidarity and mutual support for democracy. Nina Maria Potts, Washington.
Meanwhile, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he hasn't received any invitation to visit China, but he'd accept if he did. Mr. Albanese was speaking at a press conference following reports Beijing had issued an invitation in principle, according to sources familiar with the matter. It comes as ties between the two countries have softened in recent months, following tensions over the previous administration's calls for a probe into the origins of the coronavirus pandemic. Our Asia correspondent Patrick Fock has more.
Well, it is, for the time being, as you say, just a reported visit, and Australia's PM said he checked with his office on Wednesday but confirmed no such invitation had been received. The original report actually came from the SCMP following a previous report that he was anticipating a visit to China after years of strained relations between Beijing and Scott Morrison's administration. Albanese also said if he received it, they would work out a timetable for a potential visit. And conditions for a meeting do seem to be ripe right now. There has been an easing of trade barriers on Australian imports like coal and so on in recent months. And Albanese has said he hopes dialogue would continue after Australia's assistant trade minister met with his Chinese counterpart at the Boao Forum in Hainan last week. This would represent a big turnaround, really, in ties when you think about where things were just a couple of years ago. But this is also seen, one might say, as a relationship that both sides really need to get back on track for the sake of each other's economies, economic rapprochement, if you will. And there are still lots of challenges in that relationship between the two. Albanese is reported by the Post to have said Australia's clear position is that we will cooperate with China where we can, disagree where we must, and act always in Australia's national interest.
Now, there's one thorny issue in particular that's recently been reported which could dampen hopes of a thaw in relations. What can you tell us?
That's right. China has in recent days voiced concern about Australia's scrutiny of the operations of Chinese firms in the country. But in a sense, that was really to paint a picture of the possibilities on where the two sides could be cooperating with one another. These were comments raised by China's Vice Commerce Minister Wang Shuwen in a meeting with Australia's Deputy Secretary General for Foreign Affairs and Trade in Beijing recently. Australia notably, like the US and Europe, has stepped up pressure on social media giant TikTok and has, in a similar vein, cited security concerns. So that talk of scrutiny over Chinese companies may very well have been in reference to that. China called on Canberra to provide a fair, open and non-discriminatory business environment for Chinese enterprises during that meeting, and it is certainly one of the examples of where there are still considerable differences that could hamper further efforts to ease tensions between the two countries.
Patrick Fock reporting. Let's turn to NATO now, which is shifting focus to the Indo-Pacific as it attempts to counter challenges posed by Russia and China in the region. The two-day foreign ministers' meeting in Brussels has wrapped up, with the military alliance likely boosting defence investments in the Indo-Pacific. Foreign ministers from several countries across the region join the talks. From Berlin, Trent Murray has more.
Well, while day one of this NATO meeting was dominated by the war in Ukraine and Finland officially becoming a member of the alliance, day two switched focus, with senior delegations visiting from Australia, New Zealand, South Korea and Japan. It was very much security in the Asia Pacific which was top of the agenda. The leader of the alliance, Jens Stoltenberg, holding talks with those four government representatives, saying that it's more important than ever that NATO continues to work with its partners in the region. In fact, we know he said that in times when Russia and China are standing closer together, it's more important that we stand together, not just as NATO allies, but also together with our partners across the Asia Pacific. Those comments will likely rile Beijing. We, of course, have heard in the past them speak about NATO trying to throw its weight around in the region and stir up conflict, statements made in the past by the Ministry for Foreign Affairs. But that doesn't appear to be deterring the likes of Tokyo and Seoul, for example, who are continuing to work with NATO. Jens Stoltenberg saying that that cooperation will likely continue in the future, given what the alliance is seeing from Beijing.
China refuses to condemn Russia's aggression, it echoes Russian propaganda, and it props up Russia's economy. China and Russia are also stepping up their joint military activities in the Indo-Pacific region.
Now, in that same press conference, we also heard Jens Stoltenberg speak about this issue of China possibly providing lethal aid to Russia, in other words, weapons to help in its war against Ukraine. Jens Stoltenberg said that NATO has not seen any proof that that has happened, but he went on to say that if there was a change in that position and they started to see Chinese weapons arrive in that battle, then he said it would be a big mistake for Beijing. That is a sentiment that has been very much echoed by the US, who has also said there would be serious consequences for China.
And Trent, you've also been following the movements of Ukraine's president, who's visited Poland. What can you tell us?
Well, this is a really significant visit for President Zelensky for several reasons. It is only the third time the president has left his country since Russia launched its full-scale invasion back in February last year. Now, the two previous trips, you'll recall the first one being to Washington, D.C. The second one was a combination of London and Europe. Well, they were shrouded in secrecy. It really came as a surprise when he arrived. There was no prior warning given. This was different. We were told to expect him earlier this week, and I think that shows a growing level of ease in the stability and security of his government there. Clearly, his office now feels they can let international media and partners know that he is coming on a foreign visit without really the Russians posing any significant threat to the stability of the government while he is gone. Now, as part of those discussions in the capital, Warsaw, there were several key areas, I think, which really will make headlines. The first is that the Polish government has promised to send an additional 10 MiG fighter jets to Ukraine. It will take the total that they will hand over to 14. These are a Soviet-era fighter jet. They are older, but the Polish Air Force has maintained them very well and upgraded a number of their systems. And many analysts say they pack quite a punch in the air. So the Ukrainians will be very happy about that going in to the spring offensives. We also got a glimmer, if you will, an insight into just how difficult the situation around Bakhmut is, that city in the east which is being hammered by the Russians. President Zelensky said the situation remains very tense, and he also hinted Ukrainian troops may have to withdraw if the situation deteriorates even further. It's worth noting there weren't just high-level political discussions. We also saw President Zelensky speak to some of his own countrymen and women. Some 1.5 million Ukrainians are currently living in Poland as refugees seeking safety from that war. The president spoke to them and said he's doing all he can to try and get them home safely as soon as possible.
Trent Murray reporting from Berlin. Finally this morning, Nigeria's parliament has approved China Development Bank as the new financier for its Kaduna to Kano rail project in the country's northern region. The approval comes at a revised cost of $973 million. Our correspondent in Jos, Tese Makende, reports.
Linking Kaduna up to Kano, which is a commercial hub of northern Nigeria, is expected to go a long way in enhancing commerce and economic growth. It will also lead to more earnings for the government because passengers will be paying for tickets and traders for their goods. The new loan has a repayment plan of 15 years with an interest rate of 2.7%. Chinese loans to Nigeria make up 84.7% of the total amount Nigeria owes to other countries of the world. The remaining 15.3% is spread across France, Japan, India and Germany.
Tessa Makende reporting from Jos. And that's all we have time for today. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow morning from 6 a.m. Up next, it's Asia First with Arnold and Yasmin here on CNA 938. Have a great day.